George Washington, the first president of the United States of America.
When I was a boy, America was a British colony without its own power. By the time I was president of the United States of America, we had our own government. We had our own constitution. But most of all, we had independence. I was born on the 22nd of February, 1732, in Westmoreland County in the state of Virginia. My mother, Mary, was my father's second wife, and I was the oldest of their six children. I also had two older half-brothers and a half-sister, the children of my father and his first wife, Jane, who died in 1729. Both my parents were the children of colonists. My great-grandfather, John Washington, had come to Virginia from England in 1657 and had acquired land where he grew tobacco and owned slaves who worked on the plantation. My father, Augustine, had inherited the tobacco plantation, and we were wealthy in a modest way. Virginia and other colonies in the South were slave societies, where landowners who kept slaves had become the upper class. The economy had been built using slaves to work in the fields and also to work inside the fine houses as servants. In 1735, we moved to a plantation on the Potomac River called Little Hunting Creek, which was later renamed Mount Vernon. 3 years later, leaving Hunting Creek to be run by my older brother, Lawrence, we moved again to a plantation called Ferry Farm, where I grew up. From the age of 7 until I was 15, I had lessons at home. My father died in 1743 when I was 11 years old, and he left Ferry Farm to me and Mount Vernon to Lawrence. Things became more difficult for us financially. My older brothers had been sent to school in England, but after my father's death, there was not enough money for me to go to England. So my education continued at home. I was not taught Latin or Greek or a modern foreign language, as was normal for the son of a gentleman, and it wasn't possible for me to attend college of any kind. I always felt embarrassed by my lack of education, which I tried to make up for by reading as much as possible. I also spent a great deal of my time working in the fields, and I learned everything there was to know about growing tobacco and running a plantation. Lawrence became like a father to me, and I spent a lot of time with his family at Mount Vernon. His wife, Anne Fairfax, came from a wealthy family, and she taught me how to behave like a Virginian gentleman. Anne's family were very influential, and she introduced me to many important people. In 1748, when I was 16, I went with a group of surveyors to the western part of Virginia. Their job was to examine areas of land, measure them, and make a map for potential buyers of the land. I learned how to do this myself, and the following year, with the help of Lord Fairfax, Anne's father, I was made the official surveyor of Culpeper County in Virginia, which was a good, well-paid job. I also learned the most valuable skill of knowing which pieces of land were potentially valuable. Surveying kept me very busy for the next 2 years until my brother Lawrence became ill with tuberculosis, a nasty disease affecting mainly the lungs. I took him to Barbados, an island in the British West Indies, thinking that the climate there would help him. But it didn't. He got worse. I also became ill, with a serious disease called smallpox. So we came back home to Virginia. Smallpox had been brought to North America by the first Europeans and also by the slaves from some parts of Africa. It was known that if you had been ill with smallpox and survived, you were immune to further attacks of it. This meant that it was impossible for you to ever become sick again with the same disease. I recovered, but in 1752, Lawrence died. Shortly after my brother's death, I became an officer in Virginia's militia, which was an army made up of non-professional soldiers and officers, men who normally did other jobs and only joined the army in times of war and was loyal to the British king. At this time, parts of America were British colonies and were ruled with its laws. Other parts belonged to the French, who were trying to increase their territories in America. One of the places they were trying to gain control of was Ohio County, which already belonged to the British in Virginia, and there was fighting between the two nations. In 1754, under the command of a British general called Braddock, we attacked the French. But unfortunately, the battle was a disaster for us, and Braddock himself was killed. Despite this, my superiors thought that I had acted well, and I was made commander of Virginia's army. For the next 3 years, we fought constantly against the French. In 1758, in the Forbes expedition, we got control of Ohio County, and peace returned to Virginia. I resigned from the army and went back to Mount Vernon, where I entered the world of politics. The Virginia Burgesses had been created 140 years before. These were types of local government, the first to be created in the British American colonies. Members were elected by male landowners over the age of 21. In 1761, I was elected first for Frederick County, and then I won the seat for Fairfax County, which I kept until 1775. On the 6th of January, 1759, I got married. My wife, Martha Dandridge Custis, was a wealthy widow with two small children, but we did not have any children together. When we got married, we were both 27 years old. It was the start of a new and very busy life, as I was now responsible for running Martha's plantation, as well as Mount Vernon, where we lived. In 1754, my brother's widow had remarried and was no longer living at Mount Vernon. I rented the plantation from her until her own death in 1761, when I inherited it. At that point, I was still a loyal colonist, not a revolutionary, and I concentrated on developing the plantations. In 1764, we switched from growing tobacco to growing wheat, and I made sure I was aware of and applied all the new farming methods. As a politician, however, things were not as satisfying. The British were making life difficult for the colonists, as the laws made in Britain were not suitable for us, and respect for the British was starting to decline. It was becoming obvious that we needed our own government. In 1773, the British government put new high taxes on imported products, one of them being tea. When shiploads of the tea arrived in America, most of it was sent back to where it had come from. But in Boston, the governor refused to allow the tea to be returned. A group of men went on board the ships, found the tea, and threw it all into the sea. The event was later named the Boston Tea Party. The British government responded by closing the port of Boston until all the tea had been paid for and by passing a series of laws. These laws seriously limited the powers of the colony of Massachusetts to govern itself. The Boston Tea Party had been the first serious rebellious act against the British government, and the resulting action by the British further angered the colonists. In 1774, the First Continental Congress was held to discuss how we could act together against the British government. From the 13 colonies in America, 12 sent representatives. Only Georgia did not, and I was one of the 56 people who was elected to attend. We produced the Declaration of Rights, which stated that America did not have to follow decisions made by the Parliament in Britain about things that happened only in America. We agreed that the Congress would meet again in May 1775. By this time, the revolution had begun, and there was considerable fighting. The Continental Army was created, and I was made commander-in-chief of it. My previous military experience impressed the Congress. When I was elected to be the commander, I crossed the line between being a colonist and being a revolutionary. Legally, I was guilty of treason against the British. But I needed to fight for what I felt was right. Training and organizing the men became my first priority, despite the personal danger to myself. Soldiers came from all 13 colonies to join the army. But before long, it was clear that we had a more powerful enemy closer to home, and that was smallpox. I knew that if there was an outbreak of the disease in the army, our numbers would be seriously reduced. In Boston, where we were based, an outbreak happened that autumn. I heard rumors that the British had deliberately sent people with smallpox to mix with our soldiers so that the disease would spread through the army. But there was no way of proving it was true. I decided that any soldier who showed even the slightest symptom of smallpox should be kept securely away from the others. And there was a way, called inoculation, that I could make all the soldiers in the army immune to smallpox, like I was. It was possible, with skilled medical help, to make people ill with a weak form of the disease. They were sick for about a month and then recovered, knowing that they would never get smallpox again. However, although I was in great favor of inoculation, I did not want my entire army to be out of action for a whole month at a time when it should be fighting. I compromised, and by 1779, I made sure that every new soldier had been inoculated. The Congress had decided that America would have its own currency, so paper money was printed, and we already had our own postal system. On the 4th of July, 1776, the Declaration of Independence was signed by all the delegates, except for me as I was away, and made public. It explained what we were doing and why we wanted to free ourselves from the British. The declaration was sent to my battlefield headquarters in New York, where I was based with my army. And on the 6th of July, 1776, I proudly announced it to my officers. One of the main messages in the declaration was that all men are created equal, and that they have a few unquestionable rights, such as life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Since the age of 11, I had owned slaves who had no rights, because they were not citizens. They could not own property, could not vote, were not allowed even the most basic education, and of course, were not free. My wealth depended on the work done by slaves, and in my youth, it was something that I did not question. As I grew older, I began to realize that slavery was wrong, and in my will, I stated that all the slaves I owned were to be given their freedom on my death. One of the first battles of the Revolution that we won against the British was the Siege of Boston in 1775, which was a truly encouraging victory for us. During the next 2 years, we lost in New York at the Battle of Long Island, and then again in 1777, when we were defeated in Pennsylvania at the Battle of Brandywine. There followed a long series of battles, some of which we lost. Our victory at Saratoga in October 1777 was the turning point when we realized we probably were going to win the war. In 1781, in the final major battle of the Revolution, with the help of the French army, we beat the British in the Battle of Yorktown in Virginia. On the 19th of October, 1781, the commander of the British Army, General Cornwallis, surrendered. It took another 2 years before the war was over. That happened on the 3rd of September, 1783, when the Treaty of Paris was signed, stating that the United States was free and independent of the British in every way. We had been at war for 8 years, and I believed that I had done my duty and achieved my aim of freeing America from British rule. I wanted to go home to Mount Vernon and return to my life as a gentleman farmer. I did return, but in 1787, I was asked to take part in the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia to head the committee that was working on the Constitution. The people there tried to persuade me that I was the most suitable man to become our new country's first president. I wasn't sure, but on the 7th of January, 1789, at the age of 57, I was elected president, with John Adams as vice president. In 1790, I chose a place on the Potomac River to become our capital. It was named after me, and I created the First National Bank. Then I was elected a second time in 1792, but refused to be a candidate for a third time. In 1796, I gave my farewell address where I said goodbye to my country and gave advice as to how they should continue to govern. In 1797, I went back home to Mount Vernon. I was quite tired from my life in politics, and before that as a military man. But I focused on developing my farm and spent my last days happily working there. On the 14th of December, 1799, I died aged 67. But I had had the most satisfying life. More satisfying to me was knowing that after my death, my loyal, hard-working slaves would be free men and women. I knew that they would not have the same rights as white citizens, but I hoped that in the future they would have. To me, freeing my own slaves was the beginning of this process.